Setting up shop.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back again to Setting Up Shop. I'm going to make an assumption here that we're definitely the kind of people that you like listening to, given how far along in the series you are. It's highly unlikely this is the first episode. So welcome back, everyone, all around the world who's listening to us. If you are the solitary person who keeps popping up on our RSS feed data who is listening in Japan, reach out and say hi. If you are a person who's using a VPN via Japan, also reach out and say hi so that I can put to bed the curiosity of knowing who that one person is who is listening in Japan. I'm just kind of being a bit nosy, really. It'd be good to hear from all of you. I'm Dan. I'm the host of the podcast. I'm a wood turner from the UK. And with me, as always, are Rasmus, a blacksmith from Norway.
Hello.
And Heidi, a potter from America.
Hey, hey.
And collectively, we are the Setting Up Shop podcast. We talk about taking your hobby from a hobby right the way through to a business, which may still be kind of a hobby, but then potentially going part-time, full-time with it, really taking it forwards and following along on our own journeys into this process. Some of us, like Rasmus, are already full-time. Heidi's kind of stepping in and out of the sphere there of being part-time, but doing an awful lot more than I am. And I'm just dithering in the background and putting up barriers in my way and using this as a long-term therapy project, which by now all of you should have realized. So today's topic is let them say no. Not let them eat cake, but let them say no. And who are the them? Well, Rasmus kind of brought this up, and it's quite an interesting one along the lines of, sometimes it will be that people will reach out to you. Maybe they say, hey, would you be interested in making this thing for me as a commission? Or, hey, would you be interested in attending this event? Or more often than not, hey, we've noticed you on the Instagrams and we can really boost all of your products if you just pay us money. You know, that tends to be the more annoying one that you get. But how you respond to most of these requests can be dictated an awful lot by emotional response, certainly at the beginning of your journey, because a lot of us are either keen to say yes to every piece of work we've got, or conscious and worried that, oh no, maybe I'm not good enough, maybe I can't do the thing, or maybe it's just a step further than that. We will see an opportunity in front of us. Maybe there's a grant available, and we don't choose to apply for it because we tell ourselves, I won't get that. And so what we're going to talk about today is more about the fact that it shouldn't be you making that decision. It's very much more about letting the other party make that decision, and whether or not that opportunity is there, you should go for it and all that kind of thing. So Raz is going to kick us off with his first example, which we were discussing slightly in the pre-show. And for those of you who want to hear even more of my ramblings, and certainly our collective ramblings, there is also the after show, which you can listen to if you subscribe to our Patreon account, Patreon, Setting Up Shop, Shoppe. It's $3 a month for you to be able to hear the extra ramblings, and there are more things on there be worth you listening to. But we'll follow across now to Rasmus.
So this basically started maybe already back when Dan was visiting here and helping me out at Oslo Design Fair. And you there's a certain amount of, I guess you can call them scouts, that sort of go to some of these fairs and sort of look for vendors that they can try to get to their own markets. And I think it was at this market that some people came up to me, us at that point, and asked if I wanted to join like a garden fair, same venue, different time of year and all of that. And now they reached out to me and said like, hey, do you want to join? Here's, we can offer you these prices, blah, 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 blah. And I looked at that and go like, well, these big commercial markets hasn't really been that good for me yet. And also thinking back on it, the garden market for me hasn't really been that good recently. That's twofold. One is me not focusing on it and marketing hard towards it, and also not making much stuff that goes specifically to only that niche. But it's still a market, and it could still be a good one for me to attend because I can still make the sales and all of it, and it's just outside Oslo. So I just told them, like, I'm interested in staying more in this market and attending this thing, but currently, over the last year, I haven't actually had any sales specifically for the garden market. So can you maybe work with me and get me some kind of deal? And I layered on there of going like, well, I think maybe there's a certain overlap between people who restore old houses, care for old buildings, and who like markets. And maybe I can talk a little bit or do some kind of presentation on like restoration work, how to care for ironwork or something like that. So I'm basically saying that I'm like, I can't pay the full price. I'm interested in attending, but maybe there's something of these things that I can contribute. outside of the fact that they are reaching out to me because I do the weird blacksmithing things that seldom other people do, and that's not many people see. So like, I know that I have something to give just by being there, but that's a really weak selling point. So I'm trying to layer it on a bit. And she quickly got back to me and said, like, we might be able to work something out. Like, if nothing else, we can probably get some of your products in our inspiration corner. Now, I haven't gotten more communication from them about that yet, but if nothing else, that's free marketing.
Yeah. Yeah. So would this be in the exhibition hall you were in before when I came over?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. And is this more of a similar style of market where suppliers come along to buy stock for their... No?
So this would be to direct-to-customer kind of stuff.
Okay, cool. Yes.
Well, this is the customer, at least.
Yeah, the end user rather than the business owner.
Yes, but like the same kind of big venue, lots of booths.
Yeah.
And I imagine, and from what I read up from last year, everything from people selling seeds and fertilizers and potted plants to all kinds of everything else that goes into an outdoor space, whether that's barbecues or seating and furniture or pergolas or whatever.
Cool. So that does sound like an interesting, different opportunity. And I think you're right in going back to them and saying, well, look, basically, I'm not going to pay for the full pitch, but, you know, maybe I can offer something else. Because if you were to offer to go on like a panel, if there's like a talk panel at some point, normally people would charge for that kind of thing, I would imagine. So if you're like going to go, well, hey, if you reduced my fee by X, then I'm willing to do this or whatever, then that could be quite a cool thing. Because you've got a range of product that would fit easily into that niche. You know, a lot of it is like the welded up climber stuff, and you've got like the fire pit and the leaf hooks and all of that kind of stuff.
And also the fact that they're reaching out now in like August, September. I have like a sketchbook, one sketchbook just with garden stuff. And I, in theory, have the time to start producing things specifically for this market.
So when's the event?
April.
Okay. Just trying to think, that's spring, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
So
we already have a bit of spring in Norway at that point. Not a lot, but a little bit.
So yeah, I think that's really interesting. I think the fact that they've reached out with what could be interpreted as a marketing email of like, we've just emailed everyone at these addresses to say, would you be interested in coming along to this thing? Albeit it sounds like it's not that, it's a bit more targeted towards you. But you've counteracted by basically saying, yeah, but I can't afford to pay for the whole thing. And is there anything else that I can do to increase the attractiveness of me being there, kind of thing?
And that is also me being a bit, or knowing that if I want to do this kind of markets, I kind of want a big space. Because if I'm doing things for the garden market, I want to bring some of the bigger things that are bulkier, that need space. But but you're paying the pitch by square meters.
Yeah.
And so like, I could, in theory, just show up with my regular booth, even maybe condense it down a little bit, make it a bit more compact, get away with just paying for like the minimum of, I think it might be 9 square meters, 3x3.
Yeah.
But then I wouldn't be doing, quote unquote, anything special for this market, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I think that makes sense. I think having been to that venue with you, I think, and having spoken a bit to some of the organizers with you, it would make more sense if you had a bigger, more statement space. And the fact that we even spoke to them at the time about, hey, how do you feel about him like lighting fire and forging something here and like doing that kind of stuff? I think if you're able to negotiate for more of a, hey, I'm an attraction rather than a shop, the fact that I sell things is kind of like the secondary thing. And I think that'd be worth it. I think it'd probably be worth, given the fact that you've got a pet welder as well, who you can give a load of work to for that kind of thing. And it might even be worth him attending and helping you. There's a whole other t-shirt range there as well, just to note. But yeah, I think that definitely sounds interesting. But I, you know, steering away a bit from the topic we're talking about, my head's gone straight back to the designing booth and things like that. Once you know what your space is, I think after the last time, you know that you need lights, definitely.
Yeah.
And I would steer away from going smaller. I'd go bigger if you can, like if it's not going to cost you. Like you need to be bigger, you need to be bolder. It needs to like really be a thing. And I think if you go down that route, let me know the dates again, and I'm happy to come over again. And like, I'm not even worried about selling my stuff, but just helping you build the booth. And like, do you know what I mean? Like, let's make a forge.
Yeah,
let's
I appreciate
build
that.
A forge, even if it's fake. Let's build a forge, you know, let's find someone who can make a dragon that breathes fire onto your pike, and all, you know, let's really go stupidly overboard with it, because it draws people in, and then you're an attraction. But that's me going off on a massive tangent and thinking about how I would make your thing, which is not right, because it's, well, your brand.
He's basically setting you up to say no.
Yeah.
trying to.
Yeah.
Let's see how far we can take this before Rasmus says no.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And how many Valkyries are going to be there to like sell your stuff for you at the, you know, garden event? I think, you know, because you can take it to the nth degree, couldn't you? You really could. But you and I had a lot of conversations about that when I was there. And
about the Valkyries.
No, about the stage and the setting and everything else. Yeah, we don't talk about other conversations. And I think there's the problem is finding the balance between the time and money and dressing something up to make it look really cool. And the reality being is how many people are actually going to attend, and you're trying to sell garden-based stuff or stuff for outdoor living or whatever you want to call it. So, you know, that's everything from, like you said, barbecue sets, fire pits, leaf-related hooks and things that are vaguely outdoorsy. There's such a huge range of stuff that you can advertise and sell. But it's also making it portable, or yes, I can ship this to you. Yes, this can be delivered to you and taking people's details.
Yeah.
But the fundamental part of it is you don't want to be paying for a 9 meter by 9 meter space.
Like, no.
If you could get a 9 by 9 meter space for the cost of a 3 meter by 3 meter space, then that's a bit more interesting.
Absolutely.
But it's what they're going to want from you in return.
Mm. But yeah, I do actually, I didn't think about it that much. About sort of trying to sell me as being an attraction. But if I can do like the slutty Instagram thing a bit better, then maybe actually that can be its whole selling point.
But you don't even need to do it like that, do you?
I mean it jokingly, you know that.
Oh, I know. I'm thinking of from the point of view of they already know you. They've got contact with you from you were there. We had conversations with them a couple of times.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Let me flip it down.
Yeah.
If I already happen to be someone that got like 30,000, 50,000, 100,000 followers across various platforms, and I'm posting about this thing, then suddenly I'm pulling people into this venue.
Yes.
That's sort of where I'm going, where like, if I can be that kind of attraction, that would be a whole lot easier to sell, either if they personally know and believe in me, or they just see the numbers and go like, oh shit, like he's good at this social media thing.
Yeah. So the flip side to that being is you can either do that very broadly, which in the blacksmithing world means lots of smashing metal with fire and all the rest of it. But that appeals to a certain type of person. Or you could go really niche, like Veronica's done with her chocolates and going into bookshops and go, actually, do you know what? I'm going to focus primarily on everything I'm making is for the garden. I'm going to do that for 6 months. And then everyone who sees my Insta and social media for 6 months leading up to the event is going to say, oh, look, he's the blacksmith who makes the garden-related things.
Yeah.
And then that 6 months of content that is leading up to this event, and you can just keep like dropping in, hey, look, if you want to buy these, blah, 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 these are going to be at this event, or there's going to have some of these here or whatever. But that's a lot of work and a lot of dedication towards one event.
It is. And that's my problem. I don't have that time.
No.
So the my current conversation with this organizer is more like, how can I, quote unquote, cheat my way into doing as little work as possible, but getting a better deal both for them and for me at this venue, at this market, which is mean like, okay, I have a certain amount of garden stuff I sort of in the books I can mass produce. I have what new stuff do I really want to bring that I think would be a good seller? And then it's like, how much time do I have to do all of these things and then make the booth look good? And time left over is like, cool, more prototyping, more adventurous stuff.
But also factoring in forward orders.
Yeah, and that's kind of the problem currently as well. Like, I'm already so fully booked months in advance that I often have to tell people, like, when they come to me and go like, yeah, when do you need this by? Because that will affect a lot. Not the least if I am actually able to do it.
Yeah. And I think that leads into a different example of letting them say no as well, which I'm sure Heidi's had an example of it in the past. We'll pass over to Heidi in just a second as well. So give you a few seconds thinking space there rather than just jumping straight across to you, Heidi. But the whole thing of letting them say no and just, you know, when people reach out to you, whatever it is for, but don't be the person to say, no, I can't do it. Like, seriously think about it and go, well, why can't I do it? What's stopping me from doing it? Is it because it's not paying enough? Is it because there's not enough time? Or, you know, what are the other reasons? And then in effect, go back to them with that and like actually respond rather than just responding with a negative, but give them options. So, I mean, I've had one recently where I've got a cabinet maker who wants me to make some prototypes for something. I currently don't have time until November. We're currently in September. I won't have time till November to even think about working on them. And so I've gone back to them and said, hey, look, you know, I'm really interested and I appreciate it, but my time scale is this. Like, if you're still interested, great. I'm happy to proceed. If it doesn't work for you, then I'd love to work with you in the future, but I'm sorry, it's not going to be this time. And they came back to me within 2 days and said, no, that timeline's fine. That's not a problem. Mm. So you've not turned the work down and said, oh, they want it now. I'll just say no. You've been honest with them up front and said, this is my actual timescale. This is what's going on. And so you've not lost a potential customer or a potential event or anything, but you've managed the situation so that it fits what you are able to do and feel comfortable doing. I'm sure you've got many examples, Heidi. I'll sort of pass across to you now and see if there's a slightly different angle or something different that you're thinking of it from.
Well, I think a lot of times it's about negotiation, like you guys were talking about, where like, oh, well, I need this to do this. So, you know, let them say no to me. I'll set the parameters. And then if they can't, you know, adjust for them, then, you know, it's them saying no and it's not me saying no.
Yeah.
I think that's like, that's one tactic for it. But there's also that we talked about a little bit last episode about having confidence. And, you know, one of the things that I've done in my product development is chase things that are important to me in my own like artistic development or my own technical skill development, and saying like, I'm going to build this and I want to pitch it to them. Let them say no to me on whether or not they want to take this product. Like, I do a lot more wholesale, right? Like we've talked a lot about, and my business isn't always about custom work for shops or, you know, only logo mugs and those kind of things. Like, I have a lot of themes in my work and things that can be kind of sold in gift shops or, you know, coffee shops or wherever, or I can sell myself. And one of the really biggest reasons that I'm doing what I'm doing is because I love the process and I love learning and I love experimenting. So I try to have like something new every year that I get to pitch to people to say like, hey, I'm going down this rabbit hole, or I'm, you know, experimenting with this. And actually this week I got a response on the Pittsburgh iconography trays and Pittsburgh map trays that I was making.
Nice. Yeah.
And it's been I invested heavily in a laser and, you know, teaching myself how to laser the rolling pins and all of that stuff. And then it was like putting it into practice and learning how to make these pieces and getting them clean. I finally was able to send some prototypes over to one of the shops that I've worked with for years, and that they came back. So they love them. So they want them for the shop. They asked me to make some adjustments to the glazes. And I said, you know, happy to see what I can do with the glazes, but, you know, we may be stuck with what I prototyped because that's how I developed the product. So,
works. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So there are challenges with glazes. There are challenges with combinations of glazes. And sometimes, you know, from a layman, you're just like, oh, it's like paint. Well, you just put this on first and then you put that on first and you get this color, or you get this reaction or whatever. But some glazes tend to interact with each other where they'll bleed or they'll like look like crap, or, you know, they'll repel each other. And you just have to, because I've been doing this now for 10 years, like practicing this craft, I have an understanding of like what my glazes are going to do and, you know, which ones are problematic and which ones aren't. And so it's not necessarily that I can't do what they're asking for, but it's just going to take me more time. So that was my response. Like, yes, I can do it. I'll look into it. It's just going to take me some time to figure out how to make it happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know if the cost is going to change because I don't know if the raw materials are going to require, you know, more, but happy to put it into work. So on one hand, you know, I was doing something for myself with, you know, I really wanted to design these rolling pins and I really wanted to like research my city and come up with iconography for my city. And I wanted to try hand building and doing those kind of things. So it's not that I'm bored with the products that I was doing. It's just that I wanted to expand what my offering was. And I think if I were afraid or I waited for somebody to come and ask me to do that, I may never have done it because somebody may not have realized that I was capable of it because all they ever saw me do was make, you know, things on the pottery wheel.
Yeah.
So I think when you're looking at it from a product development standpoint, you also can't be afraid of the no.
Yeah.
But you can't be so afraid of the no that you don't give an opportunity for people to review and maybe give feedback. Or, you know, ultimately, if they do say no, then you just go on to the next person. And, you know, if you consistently get a lot of no's, then, okay, maybe your design or maybe your tactic or something about it is a no. And you need to reflect on that. But 9 times out of 10, people are going to negotiate. Like,
yeah,
you know, I like this, but can you do this? I can do this for you to be able to fit into this space, but can you make it smaller? Can you come up with your own signage? Can you do your own photography? Because I don't know how to shoot this product.
Yeah.
You know, all of those things are just, unfortunately, the price of doing business, because once you're outside of your studio and you're interacting with other people, your wants are no longer number one.
Yeah.
And that's oftentimes really difficult to digest because you've spent hours and hours and hours in your studio. But once you're out in the world and you're, you know, approaching companies or you're approaching facilities to say like, oh, can I have my forge here? Can I have my wheel here? Are you okay with me getting the floor a little muddy? I'll clean it up. I promise. You know, just.
Is noise really a problem in this area? Is it like, okay if I run a thicknesser and a dust extractor past 9 p.m.? Is that cool? Like that?
Do you have a loading dock?
Yeah, no, it's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because almost on the flip side of it, I make a cake stand that I do a very specific color for the base of the stand, and that is the only color variation available. And I've had two people who are buying them say, are there any other color choices? And I said, no. And that's the end of the conversation, and they've still bought the piece. So there's the flip side to it, which is just because you're in one situation doesn't mean like you shouldn't always feel the need to accommodate the other person. Like I'm not saying be mean about it or whatever, but it's just like, no, this piece has been made in a very specific way with a very specific color scheme in mind because of this process. And you can explain it to them, half the time they don't care, which is why I just got to the point of saying no. You know, I'd say no, unfortunately, it's part of my brand coloring, so that is the color it is. You know, that's one of the things that sets it apart from me. Otherwise, you know, you start getting them go, oh, could you do it in fuchsia pink? It's like, are you going to buy the tin of fuchsia pink paint that I'm going to have to invest in from the brand that I know that works? It's going to be 36 quid for a tin of paint. Or you could just buy the thing that's in front of you that I've already made. You know, and you can see it from both sides. When we are creative people, and like you said, Heidi, you spend all this time and effort on making this thing. But we need to accept the fact that once you step out into the world and you go, hey, would you be interested in buying like 10 of these? And if they turn around and say, like they have to you, love the product, but could it be a different color? Because as you've said, they assume that's a really easy, simple thing to do is just change the color. You know, get people all the time go, oh, that's really nice. Could you do it in a different wood? Like, okay, which one? Oh, I don't know, something darker. And you're like, right, okay, I need to pull out like the color chart of, you know, the 50 shades of beige or brown that you might have available to you. Which one of these were you particularly thinking of? Well, I don't know, can you make me prototypes in three of them at the different colors so that I know which one I'll like? Are you going to pay me for three different prototypes that I'm going to make that I won't be able to sell them to anyone else?
Yeah,
you know. And it's not being mean. It's learning to be a business person. It's learning to stand on your own two feet and have the confidence and understanding to say, hey, look, all of this costs money. Are you paying for it or am I paying? Because if I'm paying for it, then the cost of what I'm selling you is going to go up because you're going to pay for it. At the end of the day, someone's got to pay for the time and the effort and the materials.
It's knowing your worth. Like,
yeah,
knowing that, no, well, the time you don't spend making money is wasted. And depending on how tight your margins are and or how kind you feel, like you should still get paid for that. That should be covered someplace.
Absolutely. I mean, we had a craft fair at my day job this Saturday just gone, And it was one of the few times I wasn't technically working. And so, of course, I went in to just go and look around myself because, you know, can't stay away. And it's always interesting going and looking at stands and seeing the way that people present their work. And we've discussed this. We've particularly spoken about this in season one about how to present it and whatever else. And the amount of people, admittedly, I went at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, but the amount of people who, when you walked past, were sat down in their camp chair, slumped down, looking over their phone. And it was just like, are you here to sell or are you just here to be present? Because you're doing neither. but also there were a couple of guys there, and one of them, I spoke to them a couple of days later and I said, you know, how were sales for you? So, oh, well, you know, got a couple of commissions and sold a few things here or there, and there was some good interest. So I think it went okay. And I'm really glad that they thought it went okay, because I looked at their stand and I was like, everything's too big.
Hmm.
There's no organization. Things are piled on top of each other. There's no range of prices. There's no range of things like, where's your branding? Where's your posters? Where's your cards? Where's the telling people who you are? Where's the, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's not that they didn't want to do any of that. It's that they are early on in their journey. And so they don't necessarily realize how much all of that can help. And again, that doesn't, you know, we're not saying that what we've talked about in season one is the only formula to success, because clearly, you know, there are many routes. But from what the three of us have learned, like, there are certain things that will really help you get sales compared to looking like everyone else and having, you know, if all you make is one type of candle and it's one size and that's it, but it comes in four colors and that's all you do. Great, fantastic. But you've got to really champion that and explain why people should buy that candle. You know, whereas if you see the candle stalls that are out there, there's like 150 different scents. The candles might all be the same size, but there's 150 different scents. Or there'll be 10 different scents, but there'll be six different types of candle. There'll be the little like melts that heat on the thing. There'll be the like almost like church type candles. There'll be the little ones that go on a coffee table. There'll be the bathroom candles. All that kind of stuff. And too much variety is bad. Not enough variety is also bad. And finding that balance is really tricky. It's always fascinating for those of you who haven't, you should all be hopefully following Raz on Instagram. But when you see the way his market's laid out, because it's different every time, because it rotates depending on his stock, it rotates depending on the market. Sometimes he'll have tools for sale. Other times he'll just predominantly have blacksmith, like his finished products for sale. But he caters it towards what people are looking for. So the next thing you've got to ask yourself is then, like, have you ever stopped yourself from applying for a big market because your assumption is they will say no, or I won't get in. All right. You know, particularly if they say, oh, there's a non-refundable application fee and all of this kind of, here's the criteria. You have to send images of your work and then we will peruse your social media and everything else. Don't be defeated by that. Don't be the one who says no yourself. Oh, they won't let me in, because only guaranteed way they won't let you in is if you don't apply.
Yeah.
You have to have sent that application in and do it to the best of your ability and make sure you fulfill all the criteria. And even if you don't highlight the fact you don't fulfill all the criteria, just send the application anyway and just do the best with what you've got. And you might be pleasantly surprised what comes out as a result of that.
Yeah, I like that point, Dan, because if you're new and you haven't applied to markets, a lot of the bigger conventions, bigger markets have like usually like a new maker's spotlight or like an area for folks that don't have a full booth yet, maybe just like a newbie aisle or something like that. And if you can talk to whomever is the organizer and see if that's something that you can apply for. I know like for our big artist market, this is like an upcoming artist spotlight. And instead of it being like the full week, it's just like 2 days of it and maybe the smaller space, but you get highlighted as someone to watch, which is really fun, especially for like bigger communities that kind of have a lot of people shopping local, and Pittsburgh is a big space for that. I've seen people be highlighted in those like small little booth opportunities, and then the next year they have exploded in growth because they weren't put off by being labeled as new or someone to watch, or you know, like you can take that a different way. Like you can take that and make it painful, or you can say like, yeah, I've got a lot to learn. this is my first market, you know, whatever. But if you are feeling nervous and it is your first time applying to a big market, look for those avenues that might be there for you to kind of get your feet wet and get your foot in the door, so to speak.
Yeah.
Because they may say no to you for the full-blown thing, but that doesn't mean that there aren't any other opportunities. Also, the other thing is volunteer to help with these markets. Maybe you're not ready to be full-fledged as a participant in the market, but if you volunteer to help, then you'll get to know the ecosystem mm-hmm. a bit, and you get to kind of see what other people are doing behind the scenes, how load-in is, how pack-out is, like how these people get food and get water and, you know, when they can take bathroom breaks and, you know, what the culture is around it, because it's... Yep. It can be pretty intimidating if you do get a yes and you're like, oh my God, I've never even been to a market before. I don't know what the first thing is about, you know, they have this laundry list of things that I need to bring, but I don't know why.
Yeah, the first rule of Market Club is you don't talk about Market Club.
Right. it's hard. There's a scarcity on, you know, common information that you would mm-hmm. have at some of these big things. So like, I understand the trepidation about being judged, first of all. I have been told no. I've been told no in nice ways. I've been told no in really cruel ways. But I haven't stopped because I am passionate about my work. I know that people like my products. But I think the biggest thing for you to do as an individual who's selling their work is just getting immersed in that space. Like, How does this feel? What is the energy in the room?
I think that's also something that you've highlighted there as well, Heidi, that's really important, is that at some point during this process, someone is going to say no to you, and it will happen more than once. So in some ways, if you're applying for stuff or you're trying to do something, like, just go for it. Just go for all of it. If you feel it's within the capacity of you to meet the time frame and you know, the product demands and all that kind of stuff. And again, this goes back to having a cheerleading group around you of people, whether it's partners or family members or friends or whatever. Make sure that you talk to them, go, hey, there's this opportunity and I've been thinking about whatever. And if they're the right kind of people, then they won't push you, but they'll go, yeah, you should do it. You want me to come along? I can help carry stuff or, you know, all that kind of stuff. But at some point, you are going to be told no. And then, you know, exactly as Heidi said, at some point, you're going to be told no again. If you're doing this for long enough, you will probably be told no several times a year. But that doesn't mean that you stop. That doesn't, you know, that's not a personal affront. That's not them specifically going, oh, I don't want that person to become because I don't like the way they look on Instagram. You know, there'll be a myriad of different reasons. Sometimes you'll be like, oh, no, sorry, we're full up already. Or, you know, sorry, we don't feel your product's quite vibe with whatever it is we're trying to say, or whatever the case may be. But don't take it personally. It's, you know, it's that age old thing of, right, okay, so they're not my customer base. So what's next? What else is available? You know, like, you could even look at it in a positive way and go, oh, I've got that weekend back now. You know, that market I was going to apply for that was 3 days that I thought was a bit intimidating, and actually I didn't get it. So, okay, I've got that weekend back. What can I do instead? Oh, well, there's the smaller one-day market that's actually a bit more local, you know, and it's a tenth of the price, but maybe I'll apply for that. And then you probably wouldn't be the first time people have gone, oh, actually, that was quite nice. I quite enjoyed that. It was only a mile down the road and, you know, the pitch fee was barely anything. And I made the pitch fee back in the first hour and then I made some profit and whatever. Maybe I'll come back to this one next year. But you are going to be told no at some point.
What is that saying? When one door closes and a window?
Another door. When one door closes, another door opens. Yeah. When one door closes, the cellar creaks open and the chains start rattling. I mean, you can put it in all sorts of different ways.
You're asked to put the lotion on the body.
But yeah, you can really hurt yourself by believing the first few times that people tell no is because it's a personal vendetta against you or that your stuff's not good enough. And more often than not, that's not the case. And I mean, I'll tell you from having sat the other side of it, guys, like, I've organized events in my day job. The two things, the top secret things that I will say to you from the other side of that situation is, right, if someone has sent you an email with a map of where to come in and where to park and loads of detail in that email about the event and what time they've told you to get there and where the toilets are and all of that kind of thing, make sure you read that email and then either print it out and bring it with you so that you've got it to refer to, or download it to your phone or however you prefer to consume that data. I did an event at work recently that only had 7 attendees, and 5 out of the 7 hadn't read the email. And I was getting phone calls and emails up to 2 days beforehand going, where do we park when I get there? What's the postcode of the venue? How do we do this? And I'm like, I literally sent you an email with all of this data in it 3 weeks before the event. Okay. So that then has irritated me as the person who's organizing the event. And then they're turning up on site and going, oh, have you got a spare table I can borrow? And I'll say, no, because the first email I sent when I booked you said we didn't have any tables. The second email I sent you said, we don't have any tables, you need to bring your own. And the third email I sent you said, we don't have any tables, you will have to bring your own. So lo and behold, I am definitely not going to go out of my way to provide you an extra benefit at no cost to us when I've told you 3 times it is not here. Mm-hmm. And if you think you're getting invited back again, if you think you're getting invited back again in the future, what are the chances that I'm going to say no if you email me and say, hey, can I come to that event again? All right. So read the data provided. And like, if you haven't, and they clearly come across that there's a bit snarky in the email back, just apologize and say, look, I'm really sorry. I appreciate the time and work you've put in. And the way you talk to the organizers will always make a big difference to the way that you get treated and the likelihood of you getting invited again in the future. Because as Heidi said, if you can volunteer and you can do some work there for them for a little bit, you know, on the event 1 year, and the chances are the following year, they'll go, oh yeah, that was so-and-so, and they helped out with the parking, or, you know, they dealt with that irritating person who wouldn't leave me alone when I was trying to organize stuff, or whatever the case may be. Personalities will clash, and people will say no, but that's fine. You've got to learn to shrug it off. And if you don't feel you're the kind of person that can, that's where you get your cheerleading group, and you will have a friend who is more than happy to be the brash one who goes up to the organizer and go, hey, so the space we've been put in is the wrong space. Like, we were told on the data that we read that we were going here, but actually we're going here. Just a, you know, thought process. The space you've given me is right next door to a bin that's clearly not been cleaned for a while, and I sell a food product. Would you mind if I swapped spaces with someone 2 doors down? I've already spoken to them. They're happy if we swap over. We haven't set up yet. Would that be okay? You know, like little things like that. If you can problem solve for yourself and then you go to the organizer and say, hey, look, I kind of already fixed this. I just want to let you know, is that going to be all right from you? They'll probably say yes.
Mm.
Gone off on a spirally tangent mini rant there, but I apologize.
Let them say no.
But yeah, it's true, isn't it? It is true. Just let them say no, and let them be the ones to decide whether or not that, you know, they want you to apply. Don't you be the one to say, oh, I'm not applying because they'll say no. Let them do it. And then they do it, don't be upset.
I would maybe take this outside of the whole markets thing as well, though.
Yeah.
I'd go like, well...
We're not talking about dating, Raz. This is a... You know, you've got to keep it within the...
Different thing, then.
Okay.
Like podcasts, for example. Like, if you want to be a guest on a podcast that are related to your craft, don't be afraid of actually reaching out and saying, like, hey, I'm a fan, I'm listening. You already have guests on that sort of fill these niches, but maybe I can talk about this side thing.
Is this your way of getting those guys we've asked you to ask on for interviews? Are you doing this through a recorded part of the podcast? Having to send an email or a text?
No, this is also me saying, like, I've kind of done this a little bit. I've been planning to do more of it because it is a nice way of doing marketing, of reaching out into a whole other sphere of people where you have a genuine interest, a genuine thing to do there. And it's kind of like, well, fuck it. Why don't you just actually ask? Why don't you see if they have any criteria for what would be a guest on their show? Like, do they actually have a book written, or can you just be interesting, quote unquote?
Yeah. I mean, I've done the same with demonstrations. I took the decision earlier this year, and I don't know why I hadn't done it before, but I reached out to wood turning clubs within a 2-hour drive of where I am. I emailed them all and I said, hey, look, this is who I am. You probably know me from working at this place. This is what I do. I'm a registered professional turner. I offer demonstrations. I know you guys are a club. If you're willing and interested in having me come along, then, you know, please reach out. And I've gained an extra 4 demonstration spots next year with another 2, maybe 3 pending of people who are waiting on committees and all this kind of stuff. So it's well worth doing because those people maybe knew about me but didn't know I demonstrated, you know, hadn't considered me as an option because I'm not flying the flag enough. I'm not selling myself enough through the marketing.
I actually did the same. I just realized I did the same at my old school, reaching out to them and saying like, hey, I would be interested in coming on as a guest teacher for a week or something. If you have a spot available, if you think I have something to contribute. And we chatted for a little bit and go like, yeah, not sure about exactly when, but definitely we'll get you scheduled in for next year's school year if we can't fit you in before then.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's cool. And just had to ask.
Yeah.
Just had to have some thoughts beforehand of going like, oh, but what would I do, and have an answer? And they go like, yeah, that sounds cool. That sounds like the thing you would be best at.
Yeah. It's a definitely an amazing thing. And I call it, to a certain extent, the business brain, and having to try and train yourself to see an opportunity. And I'm very fortunate that I've spent quite a few years working in retail and in my current retail job in an environment where I'm given more power than I probably would do normally in the kind of role I have in my job. We had a regular supplier of us contact us recently, and he said, hey, just to let you know, I'm going to be bringing a book out soon. This is the topic. I just wondered if you'd be willing to stock it. And I said, yeah, sure. We'd be willing to stock it, just out of interest. Would you be interested in coming to us and launching the book at our site?
Ooh.
And he sort of paused and he went, I hadn't even considered launching the book at all, because he's self-publishing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not got that marketing group behind him going, hey, well, let's do this, let's do that, and let's do a tour and whatever else. Don't get me wrong, he's very good at marketing, but he's been so focused on the book that he'd kind of almost got them about that element.
Well, yeah, if you don't have that team behind you.
Exactly.
Thinking about those things.
Yeah. So I literally, it could have been, the conversation could have been, will you be interested in stocking our book? And I would have gone back and said, yes, I'll be interested in stocking your book. When you've got a cover and a title and whatever, let me know. We'll get it on the website and we'll launch it. Instead of which, it's the thought process, the business brain kicks in and go, well, hey, if you're going to launch this book, how about we do a day, we do a signing, then you can do a demonstration, we'll do the whole thing, we can do, you know, you can pre-order copies now and then come and collect them at the launch and get them signed by the author and do the hype and all of that kind of thing. Now, all of a sudden, it's an event. We're not having to pay him. All we're going to have to do is, you know, once the pre-orders are finished by a certain date, we can then order those plus, I don't know, 20% of however many copies of the book, have them in stock there. People come and collect it, and at a mini event, they'll probably spend some other money in the shop, which will be good for us as well. But it's developing that part of your brain that will see an opportunity and ask a question, not say, hey, let me do this, but ask the question that opens the door to that opportunity. Exactly as you said, Heidi, there was a guy that I bumped into and I was chatting to at this craft fair, and he said, oh, hey, you know, you're Dan from, I said, yeah. He said, oh, I'm from the school. This guy used to come in as a technician. He used to come and get some tool sharpening stuff for us. Oh, okay, yeah, no, that's fine. He said, yeah, he's left now. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. So I've taken over, and he mentioned that you might be interested in servicing a bandsaw. And I said, yeah, I can do that. I can do all sorts of stuff. I said, would you be interested? And then without thinking about it, would you be interested in a regular servicing contract that's, you know, formalized rather than writing, you know, rather than me just popping around? Oh, yeah, that makes much more sense. Yeah, we can hammer out the details on that. So now all of a sudden you've got a developed conversation that started a year and a half ago, where I've done a few things, odd jobs through a technician working in the school's D&T department. And now I'm speaking to the head of the D&T department, to now I'm solving a problem for him. And not only am I solving the problem, but I'm twisting that little bit more and going, well, I could solve it once, or I could solve it for you regularly. You don't have to think about it. Plus, I get an extra regular income.
Mm.
I might only go there once every 6 months, or, you know, once a year, whatever it is. But that's a known thing per year that I've got. That's a job booked in. And all of that stuff, I mean, you guys must have similar sorts of thoughts processes. I've witnessed Rasmus do it, even though he was speaking Norwegian and I didn't really have a clue what was being said. It's very funny making up what the conversation says in your own head whilst you witness people speaking other languages, particularly when we had a conversation afterwards, Rasmus, and I'd gotten most of it right, which was quite weird.
what conversation was this?
I don't remember. It was back when I was there at the fair, and I think you were talking about the guy who had come along for the competition. Who had been in the competition that you were a judge at the previous year or something. Don't worry about it. That's a post-show conversation. But what what I was meaning, Raz, was the fact that, you know, people coming to you and then you seeing that as a further opportunity and asking the question about, well, what about this?
They call that yes and in improv.
Mm.
Having that ability to just go, oh, yes to that, but also, can we do this?
Yeah.
And yeah. Also, I guess, no but yes and. I think that's the two sides of that improv thing. Maybe?
I don't know. I've not done improv and it's not something I've really watched.
That's, I guess, also a skill in all of this of sort of trying to look for the extra opportunity. And also, like, it's, I don't think it's greedy either to sort of go and have someone ask you for a thing and you go, can do that, but do you also happen to need this thing?
Yeah.
Like, can I help you out with something else?
Yeah, I mean, the caveat to all of this, and I accept this fact, is that I am a lot higher on the extrovert scale of creativity than I am on the introvert scale of creativity, which I know a lot of our listeners and fellow friends are a lot closer to the introvert side. But again, as I've said a couple of times already on this episode, this is why you need that kind of supportive group around you and the cheerleaders for you and stuff. Mm. I'm not talking about having a parent who tells someone that you will do work for them and then lets you know. That's not the same thing. All right. That's like, particularly not when the parent's gone, oh yeah, he does woodwork. Yeah, he can build you a wardrobe. And it's like, no, I'm a wood turner. That's really not the same thing. And you having to let them down graciously or pass them across to a friend who will do that sort of thing. But having someone who can help you be a bit more extroverted and kind of, you know, develop that skill set is definitely worthwhile. And I learned an awful lot of mine through watching other people do a very similar thing and understanding to ask questions about, like, so what do you actually want? You know, what is it you're here for? What's the history behind this kind of thing? Which makes a big difference. Because again, worst case scenario, what they're going to do? They're going to say no. You're no worse off than you were before.
Exactly.
So you just ask a different question. Don't keep harassing them until they say yes, though. That's the... Well, I think that comes to a natural conclusion to this episode from the deathly silence from our two companions. I've spoken far too much, as is always the case. But if you don't think I've spoken too much and you wish to listen to our dulcet tones more, there is, of course, the after show that is on Patreon that I mentioned at the beginning. So go and check that out. There's already some after shows from the previous episodes on there. And we thank to all our Patreon supporters. I think we need another, I can't remember if it's two or three of you, to pay just $3 a month. And then that would cover the running costs for this podcast for the year. So that's not us profiting from it whatsoever. That's literally just paying the RSS feed, annual bill, and a couple of other little bills, like for the website and things like that, or for the email address, can't remember which. And we've just had the most recent annual bill. So it would be really grateful if some of you would consider doing that. But if you don't, other ways you can support us. Tell other people about us, recommend us, share the podcast, share the link, share all of the kind of stuff, chat about us in other forums, talk about us at events. Talking of events, I will be coming to Maker Camp in upstate New York next month. It's like less than 6 weeks away. It's exciting. Unfortunately, my two co-hosts will not be able to attend this time round, but I will be there. I will probably be wearing a Setting Up Shop hoodie and or t-shirt. Maybe by then I'll have stickers. I'll have to chat to Rasmus about that afterwards. And we will wait and see. But I'd love to see people there and I'd love for people to come up. Don't come up and give me a hug, but come and say hi and just introduce yourself and have a conversation. And then if I offer you a hug, that's the same. You know, I can only say no if you ask, but don't leave with that question. All right. It's a big difference. But yeah, other than that, we really are grateful that you guys have showed enough interest to keep us going, and we're having a lot of fun with this. Merch has been kind of put on a back burner for those of you who are thinking or asking about it. We've had some issues with the current supply chain. We're not happy with the lead times on it, so we need to rethink that a little bit. But other than that, we hope you follow along and listen to the next episode, and we'll catch you next time. Bye.
See you. Bye.